This is the Simi Sarah Show on demand. Subscribe now on iTunes. Listen to the show each weekday 10 to 2 on 980 CKNW and through the Radio Player app.
Well, it has been in the news over and over and over. We have been promised ride sharing and ride hailing. It is still not here in British Columbia. We've heard all the benefits of it, and on the line to talk a little bit more about why it's such a good idea, David Clement is the North American Affairs Manager with the Consumer Choice Center. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You've looked at this issue as well, and we're going to talk to our listeners about it. Reducing drunk driving, if for no other reason than getting dangerous drivers off the road, what have you found in looking at that part of the research?
Yeah, what's interesting is just recently there was research done by a few professors in North Carolina. They evaluated county data and looked at drunk driving rates after ride sharing was legalized in various counties throughout the United States. And they actually found a 0.8% decrease in drunk driving per month for every additional month that ride sharing was available. So if you look at a jurisdiction like British Columbia, over 6 months, if Premier Hogan had kept his promise, we're looking at almost a 5% reduction in drunk driving over the course of the first 6 months of 2018. And if you look at that nominally, that's about 1,000 instances of drunk driving each year in the province. So it's definitely substantial, and there's a huge upside in terms of public safety when we talk about legalizing ride-sharing and ride-sharing apps like Lyft and Uber.
And even to add to that, a couple of weeks ago, or it might not have even been that long ago, the Ride Sharing for BC Coalition, which is a lot of businesses and such that are calling on ride sharing, they even had a number that was bigger than that, saying if you look only at Nashville, when Nashville brought in ride sharing, the number was closer to 30% of impaired drivers that they were able, or they had research that suggested that was the number in Nashville of people, particularly in the strip of the really... the bars and the restaurants and the clubs.
Yes.
That's a huge number.
Exactly. And you see that number actually increase in large metropolitan areas where people are traditionally going out on the weekend. So Vancouver could understandably see a significantly larger reduction in impaired driving rates. And we actually saw the same in Austin, Texas, the city that had ride sharing and then got rid of ride sharing because of some silliness from city council. And we saw that trend go the other way with an increase of impaired driving. So it's becoming quite clear that if impaired driving is a concern of yours, which it obviously should be, legalizing ride sharing is certainly part of the solution in terms of limiting those instances.
You're with the Consumer Choice Center, the name itself, Consumer Choice. So that's one of the arguments that's constantly put forward is that here's this app that people can travel with. You can leave Vancouver or leave British Columbia, travel all over the world using this app, but you can't come home and use it to get home from the airport because we don't have it here. What does that say to you about Consumer Choice?
Well, yeah, that is the other important angle here, is that we have this new service/product that is faster, safer, cheaper than the alternatives. And by allowing for that consumer choice, you have all of these other positive externalities that come about. So obviously, impaired driving is one, but another one is consumer savings. So some research done by a PhD student at the University of Toronto, Heather Bowen, estimated that the ride-sharing savings in Toronto is upwards of $200,000 per day. So that means that consumers in the city of Toronto, where we have ride-sharing, are saving almost $200,000 a day in terms of their savings from using these ride-sharing apps. And so a city like Vancouver, there's so much savings there to be had on the side of consumers. Those savings are then obviously turned into other economic activities, whether they're buying meals or going out or going to a concert or saving or anything along those lines. So it's a huge net benefit for the consumers involved and then the public at large, who are obviously all impacted by the public safety implications.
And when we talk about public safety and looking at the one area, looking at numbers of impaired driving, one of the issues, I suppose, that's sometimes raised as a reason or one of the reasons why we don't have this in British Columbia yet is public safety, saying that there are regulations when it comes to the taxi industry and there are regulations when it comes to people who drive others around, and that needs to be in place. Is there an issue of letting anybody become an Uber driver or a Lyft driver or any kind of ride-hailing service like that, as far as criminal record checks or making sure that they are, in fact, a safe driver?
Yeah, so that's actually one common misconception that we see quite a bit. One example to kind of extrapolate that misconception is for a ride-sharing service, most of them actually have a lifetime background check in terms of something like a DUI. So if you've ever had a DUI, you cannot be a driver for some of these ride-sharing services. The same is not the case for most taxi companies. And there are all sorts of other instances where the internal checks and balances implemented by a company like Uber or Lyft are actually more strict than the legislation or regulations that come down from government. And then in terms of the insurance for the person actually driving the car, just look at Ontario as an example. I mean, there's a company, Intact Insurance. They have insurance packages specifically for Uber drivers, gives them third-party liability, standard accident benefits. That includes when they're driving to pick somebody up, while they have somebody in their car, and while they're driving to their next pickup. And so I don't really buy the argument in terms of public safety that ride-sharing services are less safe. There really isn't data to support it. Most of it has to do with whether or not these ride-sharing services should have to pay the taxi medallion or taxi license, which is just a ridiculously expensive fee to the city for the ability to transport people around.
Interesting when you bring up the insurance as well, because that's also the Premier John Horgan in BC has said in the past one of the reasons that it's delayed is because we have public insurance in BC. We have ICBC, and that makes things a little more difficult, which I don't completely buy, because even if you go to the ICBC website, there is a section where you can click on Uber and Lyft, and they have a section that outlines what kind of insurance you would need if you were to be a driver for a company like that. But you make an interesting point. Just like other jurisdictions have figured out ride sharing, they've also figured out the insurance.
Yeah, exactly. And there are plenty of other jurisdictions, both in Canada and in the Western world or around the world more generally, who have navigated some of these tricky regulatory problems. And so I don't think it's really, I think it's just a matter of not having the will to actually look at where the solutions are. They're certainly out there. All the province needs to do is look at the other jurisdictions who've tackled these problems and learn from the pros and cons and the mistakes that have been made and things like that. And our suggestion would be, as soon as possible, pass some sort of meaningful legislation that legalizes these ride sharing apps for consumers.
All right, we will leave it there. David Clement, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this. It's until it gets passed, I'm sure it's going to be a very hot topic here in BC. Thanks for joining us to talk about it today.
Thanks so much for having me.